JC Corcoran Podcast.
Are you lonesome tonight? Do you miss me tonight? Are you sorry we drifted apart? Does your memory stray to a bright summer day when I kissed you and called you sweetheart? Do the chairs in your parlor seem empty and bare? Do you gaze at your bald head and wish you had hair? Is your heart filled with pain? Shall I come back? Tell me, dear, are you lonesome? Oh, Lord, Lord. I wonder. You know, someone said, the world's a stage and each must play a part. Oh, God. Oh, man, I tell you. Woo, Lord. I had no cause to doubt you. Swing it, baby. Shall I come back again? Tell me, dear, are you lonesome? Is your heart filled with pain? Shall I come back again? Tell me, dear, are you lonesome tonight?
Now I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous, don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest is jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over again.
15th of July, 2021. And you've got the J.C. Corcoran Podcast here at jcontheline.com. My daughter and probably your kids, grandkids, nieces, nephews, whatever the case may be, go back to school like a month from yesterday. The summer is almost over. And that's part of the problem with this whole idea of having kids go back to school while it's still summer. I don't understand what was wrong with the old system where you got out of school around Memorial Day and you went back the day after Labor Day. What was wrong with that? Because I will tell you this, a couple of things. First of all, think of all the money that school systems are spending to air condition those schools while it's still 95 degrees outside in the middle of August. You know, it's like somebody throws a switch around St. Louis throughout the Midwest, and the day after Labor Day, just mysteriously, the temperature goes down 15 degrees. I don't know how that happens, how that works, but it works. And then, you know, the kids aren't like roasting, just standing there at 8 o'clock in the morning at the bus stop because it's already 90 degrees. So I don't understand that. They have them going back so danged early. And then the other thing about it is ask your kids and grandkids and nieces and nephews, what happens in school the last 2 weeks? You know, when you're looking at that thing right around the end of May, the beginning of June, while the kids are still in school, they're just getting ready to let them out. Those last 2 weeks, nothing happens in terms of education in schools. Those last 2 weeks in the spring. They're out on field trips. They're showing the kids movies. They're doing, it's just like, well, we're killing time until it's, you know, the end of the school year. So to me, it seems like it's another one of those things where a problem was manufactured so somebody could come along and come up with a solution. And in the meantime, people are standing there going, I don't get it. And I'm among them. I don't get it. About 2 weeks ago, I had the hiccups and I couldn't get rid of them. And I had them for almost an entire day. And I think everybody has seen those pieces they do on shows like Inside Edition, and so where some guy has had hiccups for the last 30 years and can't stop. Brazil's president, and I don't know how to pronounce this, Jair Bolsonaro, president of Brazil, hospitalized because he had nonstop hiccups for more than 10 days. He's dealing with complications from when he was stabbed in the intestines while campaigning in 2018. Who knew if you got stabbed in the intestines, it would give you hiccups? But it's scary. It's really scary because you're thinking to yourself, am I going to be one of those people? Am I going to be on national TV because I've had hiccups for 5 years and I can't stop? The story has a happy ending, by the way. My hiccups went away after about 6 hours. So there. There's the little things pop up in front of me every once in a while. All right, so you accidentally throw a piece of clothing into the dryer that was already sort of snug on you, and now the thing comes out and you can't even get into it anymore, and you have to throw it out because, you know, it just doesn't fit anymore. Well, did you know it's possible to unshrink cotton clothes that shrink in the dryer? What you do is you soak them in warm water with hair conditioner mixed in, and then you gently stretch it back out. The conditioner helps the fabric loosen up and expand. Aren't I just sounding like Heloise this morning? How about this guy? This guy in Louisiana. All right, 29-year-old guy. He thinks he's got a plan. I don't know if he talked to Potsy and Ralph Malf to come up with this, because it sounds like something either them or the Three Stooges would come up with. 29-year-old guy in Louisiana arrested on Tuesday after stealing a ring from his girlfriend, and then he pawned the ring, and then he used the money from pawning the ring to buy an engagement ring for the same woman. The postscript on this story is, they're no longer together. We were just talking about the temperature cooling off around Labor Day. Somebody was playing around with Apple's weather app, and it turns out it will not tell you that it's 69 degrees outside. It'll either say 68 or it'll jump directly to 70. So are they against eighth grade humor, or is it something else that's going on? Well, there's one explanation that sort of makes sense, and it doesn't involve Apple hating on the number 69. They just might be sourcing their weather data in Celsius and then converting it to Fahrenheit. So 20 degrees Celsius is 68 degrees Fahrenheit, and 21 degrees is 69.8, which would be rounded off to 70. So no story there after all. Speaking of phones and apps and things like that, usually when your phone auto-corrects to a wrong word, it's either funny or just sort of confusing. But imagine getting this text. Somebody posted a screenshot on Reddit after they dropped off their dog Dexter for a haircut, and they got a text back from the groomer an hour later that said, "Hi, Dexter is dead." The groomer sent another text a minute later that said, "Sorry, stupid autocorrect. They meant to say Dexter is ready." They also sent a picture of him and assured the owner that he had a great time. Well, I'm sure the owner did too. Here's a question to determine how selfish you are. Because we have families and we have kids, people depending on us for our source of income and just our inspirational lead in the family. Yes, I'm talking usually about men, but sometimes the mother is the one who is somebody I just described. In a new poll, 42% of people would reject a chance to go to the moon even if a safe return could be guaranteed. Stop right there. You can't ever guarantee a safe return when you're going into outer space. A million things can go wrong, as we have seen before when we've had things burn up on reentry. Anyhow, among the people polled, most of them said they just weren't interested in the moon or they thought it would be boring. What the hell are you guys doing in your lives here on Earth that would make a trip to outer space and to the moon and back boring? One of the radio stations in St. Louis ran an interview yesterday with Bob Costas. Bob is, I guess you would say, in semi-retirement. He's no longer doing stuff on a regular basis, but you see him, he's got a contract with CNN. And whenever anything happens in the world of sports that sort of transcends just the sports world and starts to affect the world in general, they call up Bob. He hops in a taxi and buzzes down to CNN and pops in there. And then they ask him a bunch of questions and he tries to make us feel better about stuff. Bob, as we all know, is not the Alton Giant. And I'll get to the Alton Giant story in just a minute. But there's a lot of celebrities who are really short. And I mean really, really short. We know people like Michael J. Fox is short. We know Bob Costas is short. Lady Gaga's 5'1". Kourtney Kardashian is 5 feet even. Kevin Hart, 5'2". Emilio Estevez, 5'7". I don't think 5'7 is short. It's just not tall. Reese Witherspoon, 5'1". Avril Lavigne, 5'2". Rob Schneider, that's interesting, still considered a celebrity at 5'3". Plus, he had a hair transplant. And yes, it was 81 years ago today, 1940, that Robert Wadlow, the Alton Giant, died at the age of 32. This is 1940. At his death, he stood 8'11" tall. He weighed nearly 500 pounds. When he was in kindergarten, he was 5'6". By the time he was 18, he was 8'4" and wore a size 37 shoes. Just like the guy whose feet are too big for his bed. Nothing seems to fit. And raindrops keep falling on his head, too, like about a half an hour before it reached all of us down here. Birthdays today, Jason Bonham, 55, Forrest Whitaker is 60, Joe Satriani, 65, Jesse Ventura. Remember when he was governor of Minnesota? We thought that was about as wacky as things were going to get in politics. Arianna Huffington, 71. Linda Ronstadt, who you're going to hear from in just a little while, 75. And we say happy 82nd birthday today to Mike Shannon.
These are some of the things that he's actually said.
Oh, really?
On the air.
I love Mike Shannon.
About what made Whitey Herzog such an exceptional manager. The key thing is he has a photogenic mind. On the Cubs-Cardinals rivalry, it doesn't matter if they're home or away or vice versa. After hearing Jose Oquendo's family was settling into St. Louis, he's going to make his winter home here year-round. On a batter being called out on strikes, he knew he was out when he heard that right hand go up. Following a line out to first base, the Giants just got a taste of the medicine they've been enjoying all day. On a 1-0 lead at Wrigley Field, one run in this ballpark is like a grain of salt in the Sahara Desert. Once he said, it was raining so hard I thought it was going to stop. And finally, you can't argue with the weather.
One time I heard him say, all right, let's review the sequence of events in no particular order.
Hewlett was telling me that he was talking about Jordan and Langford, and he said, these guys are a one-man wrecking crew. And then he paused for a minute and said, together.
Yeah, the best one I remember was from when they were in New York. It was a full moon, and Mike Shannon said, boy, I wish you folks in St. Louis could see this. We can, Mike.
Oh, those great moments when people would call in with better stuff than we had. And Jamie Allman and the sports monster Steve Schlanger cackling in the background there. Mike Shannon, 82, and this will be his last year in the broadcast booth. Of course, we all know that. First Die Hard movie came out on this date in 1988, and no, it's not a Christmas movie. 25 years ago, 1996, this is where all the money is. All right, this is where all the money is. The Sultan of Brunei, Brunei, threw himself a small intimate party for his 50th birthday. They brought in Michael Jackson for three concerts. That cost him $16 million. Total cost of this guy's 50th birthday party, $27 million. Let me think back to my 50th. Oh, I remember my 50th. I do remember my 50th party. It was a surprise party. And I remember I went to that party right after I had had sex with a female traffic reporter from one of the TV stations in St. Louis. And you notice I specified female traffic reporter because I don't want emails from Smart Alex going, you fucked Roger Brand? Thank you. Thanks. This is one of those things that's sort of hard to believe, but yesterday, on yesterday's date in 1954, St. Louis reached the hottest temperature ever recorded in history, 115 degrees. That was the actual air temperature. Now, it's 1954. Think of how few homes in St. Louis had air conditioning, and the homes in the city were all brick homes, so those things like turn into pizza ovens. I just can't even imagine how people dealt with that in 1954. 115 degrees. And of course, in the Pacific Northwest right now, they're getting that almost every day. And in Vegas, it was 117 the other day. Don't tell me about dry heat. It's still 117. Somebody in the Foo Fighters or in the entourage of the Foo Fighters has COVID-19. They canceled their show last Saturday, and they just said somebody in the Foo Fighters organization. That's all we know. And, you know, you can turn on the news again today, and there's Springfield, Missouri, and there's the rest of Missouri, and you've got these dolts down there in the Springfield area who won't get vaccinated, and they're starting to drop like flies. And invariably, they will interview somebody who is standing next to the bed, and the person's on a ventilator, and somebody like the wife or the husband is standing next to the bed, and they're just sort of shaking their head, and the reporter says, did you get vaccinated? And they're like, no, I don't really know. Maybe I wasn't informed. Maybe I would definitely get it now. Well, of course you'd get it now. You're not informed, the woman said. I was poorly informed. How can you be? Never mind. Oh, and by the way, Sha'Carri Richardson, the fastest woman on earth, got kicked out of the Olympics. She's been offered a $250,000 sponsorship with a pot vape company. Take it, baby. Take it. You may recall right near the end of the Obama presidency, there was a big manufactured controversy by Fox News because the president getting off the helicopter. You know, you're supposed to salute the military guy standing there guarding the helicopter for you. And he had some books in his left hand, and he had a cup of coffee in his right hand. So he did the best he could by sort of reaching up with the hand that had the coffee in it and gave the best salute you're able to give while you're still holding a cup of coffee. And, of course, Fox News manufactured this whole thing, just like the tan suit, blah, 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 blah. Well, technically, it turns out the president isn't even supposed to salute the military officers because even though he's the commander in chief, he's a civilian. The first president who started saluting was Ronald Reagan. So everything prior to 1980, it wasn't a big deal anyhow. It couldn't have been a big deal because it wasn't protocol. The president wasn't even expected to salute the military because he's a civilian. Makes sense. You are the commander in chief. Well, it's birthday number 75 today for Rock and Roll Hall of Famer with a bad case of Parkinson's, Linda Ronstadt, 75 years old today. If you are a fan of that music era, obviously if you're a fan of Linda Ronstadt, but if you're a fan of that era, and we're talking, you know, very late 60s and then into the 70s, the movie The Sound of My Voice is a great documentation of the career of Linda Ronstadt, but it's also a great snapshot of the music industry back in that era, and I would highly, highly recommend it, and you can get that off Netflix or, you know, pay-per-view, whatever the case may be. The Sound of My Voice, very, very good movie. Now, when I was in college, this was during that same period, and I was into all that music, all that Southern California rock stuff, the Eagles, which is the band, obviously, that she put together as her backup band with Don Henley, Glenn Frey, Randy Meisner, Bernie Ledden. And by the way, that is the correct pronunciation of his name. For years, people said Bernie Ledden, and it turns out we were wrong all that time. It's Bernie Ledden. But they were all members of her backup band, and then they moved on, and she moved on, and the rest is history. Now, if you know anything about Linda Ronstadt, you know that she is difficult. She will argue with interviewers who are agreeing with her. I've known lots of people like this. No matter what you say, it's sort of wrong. And so I very, very carefully and gingerly tiptoed into this interview with Linda Ronstadt. I was on the phone, but I figuratively tiptoed because I was nervous. I wanted to do a good job, and I didn't want to piss her off. But I know that she's very sensitive about almost everything, and you got to really be careful what you say. And as you'll hear in this interview on Linda Ronstadt's 75th birthday, I sort of got caught into the trap anyhow. It's our JC Celebrity A-List interview of the day.
Linda, good morning. How are you?
Hi, not too bad.
There's so many things I would like to talk to you about. We're not going to have time. Warren Zevon, Nicolette Larson, Albert Brooks, long, long time. Adam Mitchell, who had this amazing song called French Waltz. Your Cub Scout uniform, but let's start somewhere. I want to start talking about the excess. You know, people always talk about the excess in the entertainment business. You know, fancy cars and giant castles, the works. But your book talks a little bit about the often deplorable conditions those same future stars encounter even after you've had a hit or two.
Well, you know, those early days are funny. I mean, no, you know, first of all, it took about, with any business, it takes you a long time to get geared up or anything that you need to learn how to do well. You know, like if you ask a sushi chef, they'll tell you that they study for 10 years to learn to be a sushi chef. It took me about 10 years to learn how to sing. While I was doing that, I wasn't making very much money. I mean, I didn't get in the music business to make money. I got in the music business to sing. I really was interested in singing. I was interested in the art of music and telling my story and finding an authentic way to do it. And that's what I was doing. But, you know, it's not so glamorous to move every day.
You were hearing one of your first big records on the radio while you were actually in sort of a precarious position. You remember what I'm talking about?
Well, we were going into Hollywood to have a meeting with the record company, and we had heard that they were playing our record on the radio up in San Francisco, but those were the days before, you know, everything just went on coast to coast at all times. Record radio was still regional in those days when it was wonderful, you know.
Yeah.
You remember regional radio, right?
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah.
It was fabulous. And we were in a car, our old clunker car. We had one car between the three of us that would, you know, have to take us to our gigs and get us to the dentist and wherever we had to go. And it broke down horribly. It was metal against metal, just screaming loud sound that was turning heads in the street, literally. And we got to the gas station, and we had to actually sort of coast into the gas station with this screaming car. And the guy was looking at it and shaking his head and telling us the car was never going to run again. The only thing to do was tow it away to the junkyard. When I could hear the opening intro to Different Drum way in the back of the gas station.
So you're hearing Different Drum, your first really, really big hit song, while your van is broken down.
Yeah, and it was on KROA, and we knew then that it was on LA radio and that was going to make it hit. But we were just scratching our heads. We thought, well, what are we going to do in L.A. with no car, you know?
You know, in the 70s, the music scene in California was tremendously exciting, but it was also moving very, very fast. As you look back to those days and you sort of reminisce, are there times that are things and events and periods in your life where maybe you wished, and you look back at them now and say, wow, I wish I could have appreciated that more at the time?
You know, you never appreciate what you got. You can't, no wishing amount of wishing for the past has ever, I don't think that we're even a single individual. I think we're a series of editions of ourselves. And, you know, I look back at some of those old editions of myself and go, you know, why didn't you shape up, kiddo? But there's no good in it. You know, you just have to try to learn from past editions and try to inform the future edition best you can.
Right now, we have this crop of young female singers and entertainers in and out of jail, wrecking their cars, no underwear, sex tapes, drug arrests, practically masturbating half naked on stage. And some people say, well, no, it actually isn't that different from the behavior of women in rock in the 60s and 70s. We just know more about it now because of the internet and paparazzi and on and on and on. So tell me, comparing what you are seeing.
Compared to those girls, I look like the Virgin Mary.
Well, compare the two eras.
Well, why? I mean, you know, it's very different. I mean, we have a different culture now. I don't know what's going on with some of those girls. Some of them have emotional problems and mental health issues, you know, and for which I have extend my most sincere compassion to them. I think some of those girls that you mentioned or that you're referring to are, you know, have bipolar disorder. I don't know. That's a tough kind of a condition to deal with. I don't know. There's less privacy now. But I'm telling you, people seem to think that, you know, life on the road is this one constant orgy with drugs. It's not. It's, you know, working musicians who are very together, the professional guys that are really, really great players that have been playing for years and years and years, are very responsible, very reliable guys that have their lives together, and they're highly, you know, their art is highly refined. They've practiced their heads off their whole lives to get as good as they are. And they want to keep their gig. They don't want to blow it, you know. So people out there just basically traveling from city to city trying to put on the best show they can in the most professional manner they can. You know, I'm sure they're weird people and weird band members. It's a hard life, so sometimes people crack up from the strain. But, you know, you just organize your life and you try to do the best you can. It's nothing compared to doing a book tour, I'm telling you.
Yeah. So two things specifically about you. Dispel these two rumors or confirm them, as the case may be. You were sort of painted as somebody who was sort of promiscuous.
Oh, for Christ's sake.
Not true, just a lot of boyfriends.
Why are you even asking this question? I mean, it's such a guy thing. Do you have a better question?
Well, I loved everything about you and everything you did, and I was sort of offended by the characterizations.
I'm sorry that you were offended.
Back.
You should go punch the guy in the nose, whoever said that. Now, you know.
What do you want people to come away from with this after they read Simple Dreams? They put it down, they set it on the nightstand, and they say, wow. What would make you happy in terms of what people come away from with the book?
Well, I want them to come away with a sense of my musical journey. What I did was I was not the greatest singer in the universe. You know, there are many singers better than I was. But what I did that was unusual, that was different from other singers, was I sang an unusually wide range of material. And I tried to do it the best I can. It would be great if I sang all of those different kinds of material really, really, really well. I thought I did a pretty good job. But there was a reason for those choices. It wasn't arbitrary. All of that music was in my background as a child, but by the age of 10. And I never tried to do any kind of song before I was 10 years old. You know, I never tried to do any kind of material that I hadn't heard by the time I was 10 years old, is what I'm trying to say. So otherwise I wouldn't be able to do it in an authentic way. So I describe my musical journey, how I came upon this kind of music, how I came upon that kind of music, who are the people that I found to help me, to reinforce me, to teach me, to help me learn how to do it really well. And how successful or not successful it was along the way.
Well, we are all sad to hear about what you're having to deal with health-wise these days. We wish you the best. And just, Linda, thank you for all of the great music. And
you're most
just
welcome.
The best to you. Thanks, Linda.
Great. Bye.
Bye. Boy, I'm going through PTSD here just listening to that interview. You know, sometimes you just got to tiptoe around people. That's the only way to do it, you know, and I try to ask good questions, and I'm proud of the interview preparation that I do, and sometimes it just still irritates people. So you just keep going, and you keep praising them. You're wonderful. You're terrific. You're wonderful. You're terrific. And in this particular case, I meant that all, though. I really do have those feelings for Linda Ronstadt. She's been a huge part of my musical life, and we thank her for the interview. We thank you for listening to the J.C. Corcoran podcast here today. We are here every morning. We publish at 7 o'clock at jcontheline.com, and do your best to spread the word so people know that we are here. Have a great remainder of your day. We're back in the morning. In the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The J.C. Corcoran podcast.